Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast.
Anti-woke, 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 yeah. Anti-woke, 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 yeah. Let's do this. The Anti-Woke Podcast.
All right, what kind of crime we got this week? Well, there was four racially tinged killings and almost killings. A white woman, I think in Illinois, got shot by her neighbor, and they're calling it a hate crime. Neighbor's white. And I was like, huh? But it turns out she has two black sons. And I think the guy has said something about not liking that. But it also sounds like it's a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute that's been going on a decade. So I think if you're just one of the run-of-the-mill, you know, happens-every-day neighbor-on-neighbor attempted murders, because she's in the hospital, don't say anything about race, because your attempted murder is going to get a hate crime charge thrown on top. And then a young black male aspiring medical student, I think, was left at the bottom of a lake for 20 minutes, and like almost 10 white girls were standing on the dock just kind of looking down in the water at him. And there's a video, and it just shows a bunch of girls on a dock from a distance. And so I don't know if he has like 12 inches that he's packing, and you know, he just does them 10 at a time, or if he was the gay best friend. And the 20 minutes thing can't be right. It must have been shorter, but I think someone said that. And then their excuse was, oh, we thought he was joking. And he's like, I can't swim, I'm black. Well, he's not talking real good. But anyways, he's come to, and he is talking in the hospital. I don't know if I said, the lady who was shot by her neighbor, she lived, but she's all messed up. So these two people are all messed up. Well, and the media kept saying aspiring medical student. So I went and did some searching. I'm like, what does that mean? Hey, Timmy, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an astronaut. But the guy had a master's in biology, I finally figured out. So maybe he was. I mean, with DEI, he probably could have been a doctor. Although not now if you're relearning to talk. Or maybe that checks the disability box also, and you're definitely in. That's Harvard material. And then a young black man was shot by police, and I think people were hoping it would be a big Black Lives Matter thing, but the body cam footage shows he has a gun in his hand. The cops go up to his door, apartment door, and they knock on it, and they're like very, you know, yelling, this is the police, this is the police, open up. And he opens up the door with the gun at his side, not pointed at anyone. So Benjamin Crump, the famous George Floyd lawyer, he went there with the family and did a press conference, and I guess they're going with, he wasn't even pointing. You know, you gotta wait till he points it at you before you can shoot him. If you don't wait until he's pointed at you, that's racist. So I think wokeness and Black Lives Matter are responsible for another black death, giving someone the idea that when a cop is pounding on your door, you grab your gun and go answer it. That'll lead to a good outcome. Thank God white people aren't falsely told that the cops are trying to kill them every time you interact with them. Because then you got to get a gun and you think it's self-defense, and then a bunch of people die. But that guy was an airman. He was in the Air Force. And so there was a good picture of him in uniform, so the media could like show that picture a lot. Made it better. Gave you a good visual to go with the story. It's kind of like Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown, where they went and found like pictures from sixth grade or something, and they're like, the cops shot a black man. And they'd show a picture of like a 12-year-old when they were actually much older and larger. And then finally, a fourth incident, some black guy was running from the cops. A whole bunch of cops are chasing a black guy through a fast food parking lot. And then a cop in an unmarked vehicle smushes the guy against the outside of the fast food restaurant building. So that looks like the cop's going down for murder, quite possibly. You can't kill someone who's running from you. And there could be more to the story, you know. If that guy had been just shooting a whole bunch of shots at the cops and then he ran, it's like, well, he could turn around and shoot some more, and then it's self-defense. Or, you know, you're protecting the public and everyone. But we haven't heard that yet. And this happened on Saturday. We'll see if we learn any more. So were any white people killed by cops this week? Did any black people kill some white people because of some dispute? Well, the answer to those kind of questions is obviously yes, because it happens every week. But you can't get white people to go out and basically commit suicide by cop with those stories, so who cares? We need to try our best to get some sort of race war going for this summer. There was a couple interesting stories that they weren't big enough for the national news, but Florida just passed a law saying you can't release helium balloons because they go up, they eventually come back down, and like the turtles and other wildlife eat them and it kills the wildlife. And the Gist podcast was talking about it this week, but it turns out there's a racial aspect to this whole thing. When black people die, or it sounds more like when black people get murdered, they commemorate it with releasing a bunch of balloons. Actually, it's just die or get murdered. But so now, saving the turtles is, I want to say, cultural appropriation. But no, it's the opposite of that. It's like taking away black culture. I guess we'll just say saving the turtles is racist. Well, so here's a clip.
That you all voted to allow 10 balloons to be released. Guess what? My angel baby girl would be 10 this year. She died on June 4th, 2013. So I wanted to make June 4th, 2023 a day where I will do an angel balloon release in honor of my baby girl, Lakira. And so I hope that the council will take into consideration my grief and what I'm dealing with. You know, are animals more important than my baby girl?
But it is related to murder also. Here's another clip.
Last year, more than 130 homicides happened in East Baton Rouge Parish, which means more balloons being released than you can count.
And then another interesting story. I think I got it from Philip DeFranco on YouTube. In Australia, a museum put a Picasso in the women's bathroom. Because Australia has similar laws to America, where you can't discriminate on the basis of sex. And, you know, you pass those laws, basically you're like, be nicer to women. But when you write the law, it's like, on sex, period, which means you can't discriminate against men also. And I don't know if they ever thought that it would, whatever, the worm would turn and then it would get used in that direction, but anyways, discrimination against men is now the thing de rigueur, or the hot thing to do. So they wanted an exhibit of paintings, including a Picasso, where men were not allowed. They wanted, you know, they wanted to punish men. I think basically that's what they were saying. Punish men for back in the day when they discriminated against women. But that's not legal. So they put it in the bathroom because there's a law that says you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, but you can have, you know, so you can't have a restaurant that only serves whatever, but you can do it for bathrooms. So they put it in the bathroom. And I think the court case is ongoing. They got sued for discrimination. And I think now the museum, supposedly they ordered a toilet. So they're going to put like one toilet in the middle of the museum, and the whole museum is going to exclude men. And then what about the idea that the art is not the Picasso on the wall? The art is a space that doesn't allow men. And art is speech, so freedom of speech, or at least in America, that's how you do it. So yeah, in America, freedom of speech is an amendment which would trump any sort of anti-discrimination law. I think it's different over in Australia, but anyways, they're playing that game too. And the lady who runs the museum, she's really having fun with it, making a lot of press conferences. And for one of the court cases, she got a whole bunch of women to dress up kind of like sexy business women, like pencil skirts, no fatties. And they marched into the courtroom doing kind of a one step forward, move your hip, the other foot step forward, move your other hip. Not sure what that meant, but it was a good video. So I believe the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago had a bunch of crazy riots. And then, for some reason, the Democrats' convention this year is in Chicago. And then, you know, the last presidential year, 2020, obviously tons of massive riots. And this year is looking like might be a good year to riot. Riots happen in the summer, so they're coming soon. And it may be Israel-Palestine. I did a poll a while back on what do you think the next riots will be. I think rioting over immigration was up there. I don't know, Trump, immigration. It's looking like Israel-Palestine, but you know, you got options for riots. You know, these Palestine protests that maybe are a little bit rioty, it's white women. White women do not riot good. We need black men to get out there. I don't know. I mean, black men are like, I'm going to vote for Trump this time, so I don't know. I mean, Antifa will do in a pinch. It's okay. Maybe we can replicate the riots from 2020. What about the pandemic? Can we get another pandemic going? Well, there's a little bit of a bird flu going around. I think it finally killed its first person. So let's learn a little bit about it in case, you know, maybe we can get some mask mandates out of it or something. So normally the bird flu sticks to birds, and I think at that point it's fine. And maybe it's wild birds? Anyways, when it gets to chickens, the federal government will pay farmers to kill their chickens. And when chickens have it, it doesn't transfer to people. I guess that's going to be the running theme is, you know, has it transferred to people? So usually from chickens, doesn't go to people. But it has recently transferred to cows. And the federal government does not pay cow farmers to kill their cows. So cow farmers are not as interested in double checking if their cows have this bird flu. And with birds, it's a respiratory illness. With cows, it gets in their mammary glands. And for instance, a couple cats drank some cow's milk recently and they died of bird flu. So who are the people who are working with cows? Illegal immigrants. So just like the cow farmer doesn't want to tell the government about his sick cows necessarily, illegal immigrants don't want to tell anyone when they're sick. So that may make it harder to stop the thing early. And then some stats. If a person gets bird flu, it's a 50% chance that you die, which may or may not be a bad thing. I know, like with AIDS, the problem with AIDS was it took like 10 years to kill you. So for 10 years, you went out and spread it around. Like if AIDS just made you, you know, as soon as you stuck your, you know what, into someone else's, you know what, if you just exploded and were dead, then AIDS wouldn't have spread. So if bird flu kills you fast enough, maybe you won't pass it on. I don't know. And then pasteurization kills the virus. But something like 22 states allow raw milk, and 4.4% of America drinks raw milk. So we haven't even banned raw milk yet. That'll be the first civil liberty to go, I imagine. In a recent Red Scare podcast episode, the two Red Scare ladies have Steve Saylor on talking about stuff you shouldn't talk about, like lesbians are not gay, that the gay, straight sexual orientation thing for men doesn't really apply to women. And apparently America has less than 24 lesbian bars now because all the butch lesbians have started taking testosterone and they call themselves men. And gay men, they needed a bar, or still do need bars, so they can go out and dance. And lesbians, they needed bars so they could play pool, but now they're not lesbians, so they don't need those bars. And then autogynophiles, autogynophilia. If you got file at the end of what you are, is that ever a good thing? I was thinking about stamp collectors. Philatophile, I think they're philatelists. I think stamp collecting is philately. I could be wrong on that. But autogynophile, auto, self, gyno, woman, file, love. Self, woman, love. But it's a certain part of the transgender, you know, sphere, world. And it's only men, never women. And they are sexually aroused, I think, about thinking of themselves as a woman. Like, they don't think they are a woman, but it gives them sexual or whatever to think of themselves as a woman. So transgender is supposed to be you think you're something that you're not. Not that you enjoy thinking about something that you're not. Hopefully there's a distinction you can see there. But then these men do dress up as women, so, maybe the definition of words changes all the time. So maybe the definition of transgender, it means a whole bunch of things, including men who don't really think they're women, but dress up as women and find that sexually arousing. Anywho, the interesting part is autogynephiles almost always have IQs over 120, so super smart, and they're very driven, talented, goal-oriented people. And Steve Saylor is saying, a job that these people might take is fighter jet pilot or helicopter pilot or, ruthless businessman. Have a family, have a bunch of kids, be super successful in your career, and then just usually, I guess, they decide later in life, I'm going to pretend to be a woman because for these weird reasons where you don't really think you're a woman. And I don't know if they sit around, let's just say it. I don't know if they think about themselves as a woman and masturbate or what. And he's saying the helicopter pilot who helped film the O.J. Simpson low-speed police chase, he's now a woman. Some guy, Saylor, went to UCLA MBA school, went off, became a millionaire in banking or something, and then his kid got a rare disease, and so he went and switched over to medicine and, cured the disease and made millions of dollars doing that, and now he's a woman. And then he said something that I think I've noticed but never really thought about it, but, lesbians, back, 20 years ago, back when we had lesbians, but lesbians, they're more masculine than your average woman, and so they tend to rise higher in the ranks of, corporate structures or bureaucracies, maybe not corporations, maybe, at a woke university. And, the 1,000 administrators they have for the 500 students. And, maybe it's feminine lesbians versus masculine lesbians, fem mask, or feminine lesbians. That's just a woman. That's just any average woman who decides she just wants to try something new. But that was kind of emblematic of the old gay rights movement, and everyone should be able to love who they want to love, and we need to be able to marry who we love, appealing to conservative values, people should settle down and have a family. But so, masculine lesbians are top dog. Oh, masculine lesbians on testosterone, now that's top dog. Finally, you all need to sit down, because here's a man who's been 30 years in the Air Force flying fighter jets, and now he's wearing a dress. Now all you sit down. And so that's our new gay rights movement. Let's do some weird stuff with the kids. Then they're talking about race. Is race a real thing? And Saylor believes that the false idea that race is not a real thing, it's a social construct, comes from the end of the Clinton administration. And they were promoting one of the guys who helped to sequence the human genome. And I'm going to make up the numbers, but the first human DNA genome thing that was sequenced cost $1 billion. And now you can send in some spit to 23andMe for $50. Anyways, the prices come way down. So this guy being promoted by the Clinton administration, he was there for the first one. And the first one was his own genome. And so he said, I have looked at the human genome, and there is no evidence of race. There is no race. I've looked at it. Race doesn't exist. And so it was a sample size of one, a study with just one person in it, and him. It was just him, and anyways, there wasn't multiple races in him. Now, that story doesn't sound right to me. I think the idea that race doesn't exist, they had that before DNA was sequenced, I think. But anyways, there's a theory on the reason why people have the false belief that race doesn't exist. So Saylor, he likes to think of race as an extended family. Are you exactly the same as your brother? No. Are you exactly the same as your third cousin? No. But are you kind of similar to your brother? And, more your brother than your third cousin, but kind of similar to your third cousin? And the answer is, yeah, probably. So that's race. But then I like this, some numbers. He says there's this concept of pedigree collapse. So think how many ancestors you have. So there's you, And then you have two parents. So one of you has two parents, and then they both have their parents. So you have four grandparents, and then each of those has parents, which gives you eight great-grandparents. And, you know, you can just go 8 times 2 is 16, times 2 again is 32, and that'll be great-great-grandparents, great-great-great-grandparents. And so if you double the number 1 10 times, you get 1,024. So call it 1,000. So every 10 generations, you have 1,000 ancestors. And then each of those of your 1,000 ancestors has 1,000 ancestors themselves if you go back another 10 generations. So every 10 generations, you go 1,000 ancestors, 1,000,000 ancestors, 1,000,000,000, 1,000,000,000,000,000. I mean, you know, you can keep saying numbers, but there wasn't that many people on the planet. I mean, whatever. I'm just going to say a bunch of numbers. Don't worry about the numbers. But, you know, what's a generation? 20 years. 10 generations, that's 200 years. So every 200 years, there's 1,000 times as many ancestors. So, you know, you go back 1,000 years, now there's trillions or quadrillions or something of ancestors, except there wasn't that many people on the planet. And so, you know, I'm white, so we'll just imagine, you know, I don't know how many white people there used to be, but you go back a number of generations and basically it's just all the white people that exist. You know, my ancestors are these 10 million white people who lived 1,000 years ago or something. And if you're white, same with you. So basically, you don't have to go too far back, as you know, as far as, you know, if you're talking about like the difference between animals, like, you know, species and the history of the earth and blah blah blah, it's just like, oh, white people come from this group of white people however many thousands of years ago. And then, you know, Chinese people, they come from this group of Chinese people thousands of years ago. And it's just like, it's a completely different group of people. So, you know, all white people share that group of people, and all Chinese people share that other group of people from thousands of years ago. And that's race. Clear as mud? All right. And the term is pedigree collapse. So basically, you know, I think they say collapse in math, which you have a giant number and it just collapses down to a small number. Basically, a large number becomes a small number. It collapses. And I guess your ancestors, the tree, your family tree of all your ancestors is your pedigree. So your pedigree collapses. Love it. Well, so the last several minutes is just me talking about it, not what this guy said. But it's been a while since I've gone over population groups and out of Africa. Let's do a quick one of that. So humans come from Africa. If you want to know what, like, the most old school type of human was, they were similar to the Bushmen, the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy. They're called the Khoisan now. But Africa has maybe 100 tribes, where the DNA from one tribe to another is more different than the DNA difference between a white person and a Chinese person. And that's because maybe 2 or 3 times humans left Africa and went to the rest of the world. And I don't know, but maybe it was just like, you know, like 1,000 people. Like 1,000 people left Africa, and that is everyone who's not an African, black African. That's their ancestors. They all come from like that 1,000 people, or like I say, I think it happened twice. So this 1,000 people or that 1,000 people, that's everyone else. And then I think the humans went to India, like dot on the forehead, and then they spread out to everywhere from there. You know, so white people, Europeans, they're from India, and before that from Africa. Except there is one kind of white person, the yip yappers, the Laplanders. They're an indigenous people that lives way up north, like in Norway and Finland. And their lives revolve around reindeer. And I think they didn't go to India and then up to Europe. They went like straight from Africa on north. And if you look up pictures of Laplanders, like a lot of them is just like, I don't know, hot Swedish blonde chicks. But I think that's because of interbreeding with your normal Europeans. And like a classic Laplander from, you know, if you could find one from a couple thousand years ago or something, I think they were kind of like a special kind of Eskimo. They were like a white Eskimo with dark hair, but now they're blonde. I don't know. They're pretty interesting. Another name for Laplander is Sami, S-A-M-I. And I don't think they have casinos, but they do have special rules for them as indigenous people. Like I say, even though a bunch of them are just blonde. I don't know. You look up Laplander girl, you get a bunch of blonde chicks. you know, don't ask me how I know. And so that's race. You know, Chinese people come from the same Chinese ancestors, and white people come from the same white ancestors. But we all ultimately did come from Africa, so, you know, it makes it so if someone is like, wants to say race doesn't exist, it's like, oh, you're just an African. You're an African anyways, and in a way that's true. And then 23andMe is going to tell you that you're 98% Northern European and your wife is 99% Han Chinese. And if those are two races, then there's 100 races in Black Africa. You're like, oh, you're the Click tribe DNA and you're the Ouga tribe DNA. I don't know. You should never try and come up with a name of a tribe off the cuff. The Khoi tribe and the San tribe. There we go. So it kind of allows someone to say race doesn't exist, you know, because, hey, look at this. These black people are more different than Chinese are from whites. And then, you know, scientists, they're like, oh, you know, well, we want to be scientific about this and not get caught up in race politics. And so they're like, oh, we'll call them population groups or sometimes just groups. And now you're from the Han Chinese group and the Northern European group. But anyways, people have gotten wise to that. You bring up population groups, they're like, oh no. They don't say population groups are a social construct. They say anyone who talks about population groups is racist and they better stop talking about it or else they're going to lose their jobs. So on YouTube, I watch ABC World News Tonight and NBC Nightly News to try and gauge the narrative that's being fed to the normies. And mostly as how it relates to the upcoming November election. And so like the last 3 weeks, you know, one of the stories is Trump on trial and the other one is the Palestinian college protests. And it is thought that Trump on trial hurts Trump and the college protests maybe hurt Biden. Not, you know, it's not him. He's not out protesting. He's too old. And on that front, when Biden has been speaking, he's been sounding better lately. I've mentioned that. He did an interview this week talking about Israel. He did not sound very good. He may be backsliding. But the reason why the protests might be bad for Biden is it's chaos. Chaos, I say. Now, it's not the word chaos. It's actual chaos. The word chaos is reserved for whatever the Republicans and the House of Representatives are doing. The mainstream media is trying to get the normie brain to go, Republicans in the House of Representatives, Rorschach test, the word chaos. The Democrats and the Republicans have come together 116 times in a row to pass an arms bill. Will they pass this next one? It's complete chaos. Oh, they passed the 117th one in a row. But so, you know, colleges, is that chaos? We got this summer coming up, that may be chaos. We had the summer of love right before Trump lost last time. Trump was like, these Black Lives Matter riots are intolerable. I'm going to do absolutely nothing about them. But so protests and trial, that's the last few weeks. This week, the protest coverage is dying down. The trial has heated up because of a porn star. Would you like one? Why? Do you got one? So NBC Nightly News did a little segment on how Columbia University canceled their graduation this year. I think that was, well, I'm recording this on Friday morning, but anyways, that was pretty much what they had to say about the protests this week. And this week, some high school, I don't know, principals or something, were hauled in front of Congress to talk about high schools getting anti-Semitic. Like, it's gone from the colleges to the high schools. And the narrative on that was that the college presidents who had been hauled in front of Congress, they did terribly and they all lost their jobs. These high school principals, they're amazing and they just smacked down Congress with amazing wit and repartee. Basically, the high school thing doesn't matter. A little history, in the late 60s, there were college protests against the Vietnam War. I think Columbia was off the chain in 68. I kept hearing 1968 as the year, so I went and looked up Kent State. That was 1970, so Kent State University, the National Guard was called out, and the National Guard shot and killed 4 students. And I think the public went from being on the side of law and order to being on the side of student protesters. But everyone knows, remember Kent State, do not shoot any protesters. Black Lives Matter protest, just let them shoot each other. and try not to get caught on camera doing anything. Which reminds me, the Biden administration was banning menthol cigarettes, which is aka black cigarettes. The cool kind of cigs, the cigs that can dance. But this week he said, never mind black people, I'm not banning your cigs, at least not until after the election. So please vote for me. And remember, if you don't vote for me, Joe Biden, then you ain't black. So like I say, protest coverage is dying down, but then the Slate Culture Gabfest podcast covered it this week. I think it's a relatively big deal mainstream media podcast. Normally they just do like a movie review and then a TV show review, and then maybe they'll talk about, like, you know, the new Taylor Swift album. I will say, the third segment, you know, it's not always an album. It's kind of a potpourri. So anyways, their third segment this week was just someone talking about the protests. But so, like, the Black Lives Matter protests, the mainstream media did not couch their lies with any disclaimers. They would just, you know, full-throated lies and nothing but lies. But these protests, you got the Jews on one side, you got the Palestinians on the other. It's hard to get your lies in order. And so I don't believe really in the idea of profiling and tells. Oh, you're folding your arms together. That means you're closed off. That means you're ashamed. That means you're lying. Or whatever all those things are that are supposed to help you tell if someone's telling the truth or lying. But if tells are real, then this lady who's talking about the protests is kind of amazing and just full of them to the brim. So, things to look for in these clips is reporters, journalists, you can trust them. They're not a bunch of liars. And beyond that, what is reality? What is truth? We all have our own reality. And by the way, I'm coming from a place of honesty and clarity, in case for some reason you think I'm dishonest and trying to hide the truth. And anyways, this whole thing is very complicated. It's almost impossible to be accurate describing something this complicated.
Are they violent conflict zones filled with militant protesters who hurl anti-Semitic abuse? Is it a giant love fest of students braiding daisy chains and singing Kumbaya? I, Lydia, tried to figure this out the only way I know how, by reporting. Hear, hear, and I'm very curious to hear what has your reporting shown you thus far?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I have a tremendous confidence in reporting. And I think it's an absolutely incredibly important part of capturing reality. But I'm also very conscious of the fact that we all have our own bolt holes into reality. And I just happen, in the happenstance, this whole stew of information that's like hard to parse and pin down. So I sort of felt like my role was to just try and report as honestly and clearly as I could. So anyway, I just tried to dwell with the complexity of what I was seeing and reflect back accurately based on, you know, my own perceptions and what I know.
And then another lady who's a regular on the show jumps in. And she's like, if you were thinking about doing some wrong think and not believing the narrative that the mainstream media is feeding you, I think you might be a racist. I'm looking at you, Trump supporters. And then the original lady comes back in and just ties it all up in a nice tidy bow and puts a cherry on top.
What's been striking about the conversations around these protests and the coverage of them is the balance between the approach you've taken, which is what is actually going on here. And as with any protest, student or otherwise, what's going on is usually so many different forces at once. Like, so there are people who want to look at the nuance of that. And then there seem to be so many people in the culture who want to simplify or use the protest to represent any of a number of things, that the young are heedless idiots, that grown-ups are craven cowards, that and cruel and perhaps racist, like ways in which various folks, politicians, commentators, pundits, seem to have been spun into an irrational panic by the protests across campus.
Well, there's just so much projection going on, right?
I think the whole thing was projection. She at least had the right word.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.
So I've become sensitized, or my ears are perking up any time that mainstream media people talk about the truth. And so I'm not sure, but I don't think they were talking about it, you know, in 2020, Summer of Love, or I don't know, really until just recently. I mean, they've got a sticky wicket. How do you go from nothing but lies to telling the truth? Like, you don't want to, the truth cannot be, oh, by the way, we've been lying to you, you know, ever since Trump got elected. Every single thing was a lie. Everything about Black Lives Matter, everything about COVID, everything about Trump, it was all lies. Now, don't fire me. Maybe I just won't admit it, and I'll just tell the truth. Or I'll preface my lies with, well, everyone has their own individual truth. And I think this stuff got set off because NPR got caught kind of with their hand in the cookie jar being biased. I mean, liars. Well, people now know they're biased. The truth is, they're a bunch of liars that I listen to every morning. But because of that, it coincided with the new CEO, the white woman, who had these TED Talk clips where she's going, what is truth? What does the truth mean anyways? We all have our own truth. It depends on our lived experiences. And so now I think mainstream media people are thinking about truth. And I don't think they want to fall back any longer on the truth. Oh, that's part of whiteness. Data, that's white supremacy. And it's like, yeah, you're kind of right. The truth is racist, but not the way you mean it. Oh, okay. So the high school administrators that got hauled in front of Congress. I thought I had a point on this. Why'd you even bring it up? Jeez. Well, I have a clip, and it's actually a Democrat politician lady from Oregon, which is my state. Go Oregon. And she uses what I think is the original lie. This is the lie that started all of the mainstream media being a bunch of liars. And this is from when Trump was talking about the Charlottesville white supremacist march. And he said, well, because there was a bunch of people there. There's people that didn't want all the statues torn down. People who did want to tear down the statues. And then also some white supremacists. And schizophrenics who did bad things. But anyways, Trump was talking about the statues, the people who wanted to tear them down and the people who wanted to keep them up. And he's like, there's fine people on both sides. And then his next sentence was basically, and I'm not talking about the white supremacists. And then every mainstream media outlet and every Democrat politician ever since is like, he said there's fine people on both sides and he was talking about the white supremacists. And you could be like, here is a transcript of the thing where he says, specifically, he's not talking about the white supremacists. And they're like, transcripts are part of white supremacy. It is a long list of things that are part of white supremacy. And then in 2020, Joe Biden specifically said he was running for president because Donald Trump said that. And thinking about that, maybe that's a genius move. Like, he knows it's a lie. He knows the mainstream media will cover his ass on that because all of them have repeated that lie for, you know, at that point, I don't know, 5 years, 4 years. You know, so maybe if you aggravate the opposition enough, they might do something stupid like storm a Capitol. Here's the clip.
Well, they repeatedly questioned Republicans' political motives for the hearing. Here's Suzanne Bonamici of Oregon.
Many of my colleagues claim to care about the rise of anti-Semitism in this country. But when white supremacists marched in Charlottesville, Virginia, with burning torches and chanting, Jews will not replace us, the president at the time, Donald Trump, said there were very fine people on both sides.
Bonamici went on to list several other things Trump has said or done that could be considered anti-Semitic, and even took a moment to invite her Republican colleagues to disavow those comments, and there was silence.
Oh, and speaking of NPR, so the House Republicans recently re-upped their federal funding so that they can, you know, do whatever it is that they possibly can to stop Donald Trump, because that's what the House Republicans want. But so, even though it doesn't matter, some Republican is crafting a bill that would defund NPR. It's like defunding the police. Like, after defunding the police, there were still police. But the bill is interesting, and it's finally allowed me to learn a little bit about exactly how the money works with NPR. What I knew previously was the federal government gives money to NPR. NPR says, oh, we don't even need that money. That money is not, you know, we can do what we're doing without that money. And also, please, please, please do not take away that money. And finally, no, we're not going to do a breakdown of how the money is being spent. You don't need to know. And so it turns out NPR, they do get a little bit of money from the federal government directly. But almost all their money that comes from the feds, it goes to the local affiliate stations. And then the local affiliate stations buy the programming from NPR. And so NPR has been left-wing, you know, probably my whole life, certainly the last 30 years that I've noticed. And they've been bonkers woke ever since Trump got elected. And this part I don't know, but maybe the reason why the feds and the Republicans, when they're in power, they always give money to NPR is because do you really want to close your local station? You don't want to do that, maybe. Or maybe military industrial complex, something, something. But so you can see with that setup, if you take away the direct funding from the feds to NPR, it doesn't really affect them. And so what this bill proposes to do is you still give the exact same amount of money to all the local affiliate stations, but there is a prohibition of spending any of that money on NPR programming. And so an episode this week of the Gist podcast, Mike Pesca, the guy on that, he went on an NPR show and argue with some NPR guy. And, you know, this NPR guy, he is, whatever, he's used to telling lies. Telling lies and telling himself that they ain't lies. That's the big lie. And so even though earlier in the show they mentioned this bill that I just described, he's like, oh, well, you know, defunding NPR won't even do anything. And that's because he's bait and switching and talking about that small direct funding from the feds to NPR. And so basically, you can choose. There's a couple kinds of defunding. There's the kind that won't work. And so anyone who likes NPR is like, oh, defunding won't work. And then there's the kind that will work, and they will never mention it. I'm going to cut in here with a clip from NPR's Trump's Trials podcast, their Saturday episode. So this will be NPR's expert basically saying that this trial against Trump is bullshit. I mean, you know, if NPR says so, you know, that's when you can believe them. But this trial brings up the question of integrity. Like, has the DA thrown away their integrity in order to stop, you know, kill the baby Hitler because they were able to go back in time? Has the judge thrown away all of his integrity because Trump is worse than Hitler? Well, we are going to get a ruling, official ruling, on whether or not these people threw away their integrity and it's all politically motivated. And that ruling comes from the appeals court. And unfortunately, that decision comes after the election. But it's similar to a discussion I was having with my woke buddy. We were talking about interest rates and the Fed. And there's a theory that the Fed will cut interest rates even though they're not supposed to help Biden get reelected. And inflation ticked up most recently, and they have not cut interest rates. So as long as they don't cut interest rates, it looks like they do have integrity. But there's an easy way to check that, because you look at two numbers, unemployment and inflation, and if those go a certain amount in one direction or the other, then you either cut or raise interest rates. So basically, if they change interest rates, you can just go look at unemployment and inflation and see if they did it because they're supposed to, or because it's time to go back. You know, the time machine has been invented. They're going back in time to kill baby Hitler. But the legal system is, in my opinion, already shown they have no integrity. But like I say, we won't get the official thing that makes the mainstream media all take notice until it's too late. Here's the clip.
My concern was that a prosecutor had a duty at this stage to say more about why this case was being brought 8 years after the crime had been committed and, you know, 7 years after it was widely known. So instead of telling the public more about why he was reversing the previous Manhattan DA's decision not to pursue this case, he told us remarkably less. And even a year later, after writing that op-ed, I think we still are confused about what's the theory behind why this is a felony. Mm-hmm. I'm still not clear about what the prosecutors are going to make as their closing argument, because their opening statement was still unclear about why this business filing misdemeanor is turned into a felony for what other crime was being concealed.
The initial argument was about election interference. The details this week were about sex in 2006. But like you said, the key alleged crime here is covering up a payment that might have violated campaign finance laws.
To be clear, it's the campaign finance law is the Federal mm-hmm. Election Campaign Act. This is the first time in American history any state prosecutor has tried to use the Federal Election Campaign Act in a prosecution, either directly or indirectly. And my concern is that this is unprecedented. But once a precedent is set, other prosecutors may try this in other states.
Politics and Donald J. Trump.
Politics and Trump, I'm the anti-woke. Some Joe Biden too. It's anti-woke podcast time.
And from listening to the whole Trump's Trials episode, it sounds to me like the train has left the station, and the judge is the conductor. So, let's imagine a situation where the DA wants to charge you with murder because you pet a dog. And you're like, well, how does that work? And the DA prosecutor is like, well, dog years are 7 to 1 of human years, and if that dog was as old as a human, then they'd be 170 years old, so they'd be dead. And so then you'd be petting a dead person, and then you would have killed the person because they're dead of the age, but you already petted them. And so I guess the way I thought our legal system worked was the DA could do that. They could charge you with that stuff, and then the jury would be like, well, that's hogwash. And after the trial, the jury would find you not guilty. But in fact, a DA trying to charge you with murder for petting a dog, it would never get to trial or the jury, because the judge has discretion to throw out things that are just obviously bullshit. And so now that this trial is going, basically we've gone past that point where the judge would throw it out. So basically the judge is like, oh, you want to charge someone with murder for petting a dog? Fine with me. Let's let the thing proceed. And so the next point is the jury instructions that come from the judge. And, you know, he'd be like, okay, jury, don't worry about whether or not it actually killed the dog or the old age of the 7 to 1 dog years. Just if his hand touched the top of the dog's head, then he's guilty. Otherwise, he's innocent. Now go in there with your information and find him innocent or guilty. And so if you agree to the trial, then you agree to the whatever it is that the DA is making up, which means that your jury instructions are going to go along with that stuff too. So like I was saying, the protests were a pretty big story. The biggest story was Trump and his trial. And like, I woke up at 1 a.m. and I listened to a whole bunch of Trump's trials from NPR. It used to be weekly, now it's daily. I took copious notes, which just meant hit pause on my phone and then send an email to myself that's like, Wednesday, Trump do good. Thursday, Trump do bad. But they had some guy on who's a reporter who's in the courtroom or a legal expert or something. And he was kind of handicapping it or grading it or treating it like a sports score. And I think basically he was going on who was pissing off the judge. So the first 2 weeks, it was Trump and his lawyers. They were always pissing off the judge. So that means they were the losers. And then this week, the prosecution got their porn star up there. And the judge said, don't be getting too graphic with the hanky-panky talk. And they just went straight to the A or whatever. And so the judge got mad at them. But then I think Trump did something the next day and the judge is back to being mad at Trump. So anyways, I don't know who's winning. It's 7-3. Three what's? I don't know. But I guess several people got up there and were like, Trump doesn't deal with every individual check. Because, you know, he's charged with 34 counts of something something, which is 34 checks. And apparently Trump and his lawyers did a fist bump. when one of the people said that. And then they came back and they're like, look at Exhibit 17. This check has Trump's signature. It's his special when he's a president's signature. Which I don't get that, because it's supposed to be affecting the election before it happens. So how can his thing as a president do it? Because he already won. Anyways. But then there was a not that attractive porn star up there. And so, I mean, I don't blame the media for that. It's not every day you get a porn star. It's not every day you get to just say the words porn star over and over and over. So anyway, so you got to talk about that a bunch. And they did. So let's make fun of Stormy Daniels, the porn star. That's not her real name. That's like her porn name. Every porn star has like a secret identity superhero name. And her real name is Stephanie Clifford, which just makes me think of that the kids' book, Clifford the Big Red Dog. One woman Trump's palling around is killing a dog. Another one kind of sounds like a dog. But so to report that Stormy Daniels, you know, is in the courtroom saying blah, blah, it's kind of like if Robert Downey Jr. had to take the stand and they're like, today, Iron Man said Trump likes dogs. Cut him some slack. And you can believe me, because I'm Iron Man. But here's a semi-prediction. I think Trump wants the judge to put him in jail. Like, so far, the judge has fined him $10,000 for 10 times that he talked about stuff on the internet and the judge didn't like it. But I learned, apparently the judge can just put him in jail for like 1 hour. Like, he doesn't have to, I don't know. A lot of times, you know, they put you in jail for a long time. Anyways, he can just do him for 1 hour if he wants. And I think Trump might think that would help him get elected. So it hasn't happened yet. Well, unless it happened and I didn't hear about it on Friday. So it's still a prediction, but anyways, I heard that from someone else. I didn't make it up. I swear, you gotta believe me. 2 weeks ago, I was kind of thinking, I had a train of thought that was heading in a certain direction, and it almost went to the place where Trump wants to get put in jail. But I just didn't quite get to the station, and then I heard someone else say it, and it's like, damn it, now I can't take credit for it. It's kind of like how 1,000 years ago, on two opposite ends of the earth, two men invented the fork at the exact same time. Except one of the men invented the fork as he was eaten with a fork made by the other guy. And then the Georgia case, which is another election interference one, I guess it's another state one. Anyways, Fannie Willis, the diversity black female prosecutor who is sleeping with her employees and going after Trump. Well, the Georgia appeals court decided to look at whether or not she should be removed. She was already looked at and said she could stay. They're going to see if she should be removed. And basically, I haven't heard, and I'm too lazy to look up. Some parts of Georgia are like crazy hardcore Republican and maybe even MAGA. So maybe the appeals court has a bunch of, who knows, people appointed by Trump. But either way, he's got this appeal, which hasn't happened yet. He can appeal it again after that. And so everyone is now saying the only case that's ever going to get to court in time is the one that Trump is on trial for right now. And the Florida classified documents case, the judge just indefinitely postponed that one. And that leaves the Supreme Court presidential immunity one, which is slow boat to China. China. And back to the porn star. So to this day, Trump says he doesn't know what she's talking about. He never had sex with her. And I don't know why I'm sure, but I'm pretty damn sure he hid it. Just enormous fake. But anyways, like, I don't know, one person I was listening to is like, he should just say, fine, I had sex with her, and then she doesn't get up there for a week saying a bunch of bad stuff about him. She was like halfway saying he raped her. She said there was a power imbalance. She's been listening to some woke professor, and she blacked out, but she wasn't drinking or on drugs. But so, she has nothing to do with, you know, who signed the check and blah, blah, election. So probably could have skipped her if he just like, fine, I did it. I slept with her. But so I don't think this is the case, but this could be the 3D chess move is that, you know, people think Trump is doing and he never is. It's because one of his excuses or get out of jail cards is he didn't pay her the hush money because he wanted to win the election. He paid her the hush money to protect his family. And so the fact that he's still denying it kind of makes it sound like, you know, he's doing it for Melania's sake. And unfortunately, none of this case is in video or recorded. I guess that's probably good for Trump. But for the old folks like me, I mean, not so old that we saw it when it first came out, but saw it in reruns, you know, the old Perry Mason TV show, we're not going to get the thing where at the end, finally Trump's on the stand and he's like, "That's right, I did it, and I'd do it again. I'd pay that hush money 100 times for my Melania." Let's check the political betting markets. Joe Biden, 52. Donald Trump, 48. So Trump is down 4 cents on the dollar. I think that's the same as last week. But it's better than like a month ago for Trump. And then Trump vice president, Tim Scott, 22, which is way ahead of everyone else. And then about all the same as J.D. Vance, Elise Stefanik, Doug Burgum. I think Doug Burgum is the governor of North Dakota. So it was looking like Trump would select Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, but she's out because she killed her dog. And now the governor of North Dakota, a man, is in there, Burgum, which, well, it doesn't matter, but it's just fun that one, you know, both of the Dakotas are in there for some reason. And then Doug Burgum has a slogan or something. Anyways, it's Bergmentum. So possibly Bergmentum is sweeping America. I had 2 interactions on Spotify this week. The question is, what's pissing you off and where are you from? Dan said, "Longtime listener, first time caller, Bluffton, Indiana. People who obviously flunked economics and government classes just print mo' money? Yeah, right. Why do hot, lonely Asian women keep lusting for me?" Well, that's a good question, Dan. It's just a good question. And Chopper22 said, "I'm Curtis the truck driver from North Carolina. At Appalachian State, where I went, these protesters would never make it. They'd get their asses kicked." Well, sounds about right to me, Chopper22. I met a guy from North Carolina once. He had an accent. I could not understand what he was saying. I don't know how we got on the subject, but he kept going, "Ha-wawa." And I was like, "What?" He's like, "Ha-wawa." Like when there's too many minerals in your water, ha-wawa. Well, it's fun to know where listeners are from. So any other you listeners and you use Spotify, please leave a comment. And regardless, tell a friend about this podcast. Oh, sexy fingers. Getting your Spotify comment in just in time, listening to the podcast on Friday. And the way the Spotify website works when I publish my podcast is when there's comments, I have to click publish on each comment. Like, the comments come in, but other people can't see them. And basically they're relying on me to check them and make sure they're not saying something you shouldn't say. But Sexy Fingers' comment, it didn't even want to show the comment to me. It tells me I have a comment, and I go to comments, and there's no comment there. But anyways, you click around and you say, "Yes, yes, I really, really do want to." And so I published it. So here's the comment that Spotify was not too sure about. So Sexy Fingers said, "This is, you know, the question is, what are you pissed off about?" He said, "Anti-Israel protesters, these queers that are pro-Hamas knew if they are in Palestine, they would be killed. Muslims kill LGBTIA, queer alphabet soup, the fucking idiots." So thanks for the comment, Sexy Fingers. Where are you from? If you don't want to say, that's fine. And that's kind of a meme that's going around. Like, I saw a thing on Twitter. It was a single picture that had split screen, and on one side it said "Queers for Palestine" and showed some trans whatever, and on the other side it said "Queers in Palestine," and I think it had a dead body. And so you might be like, you know, why are queers supporting Muslim terrorists? Well, it's not that complicated. Queers and Muslim terrorists, they both hate the white man. Paramount Pictures is looking for someone to buy them right now. And they are one of the big 5 movie studios. There used to be 6, but Disney bought Fox. And maybe Sony Pictures is going to buy them. which is another one of the big five, so that will go from five movie studios down to four. And Sony, if that doesn't sound like the name of an old school from the 1940s movie studio, it's because Sony is really, they used to call them Columbia. And the other people that want to buy them are Skydance, which is the son of Larry Ellison, who's the guy who started Oracle, a giant rich tech company. So we are getting to the point where a tech billionaire has given so much money to his son that his son is going out and buying movie studios. I think, you know, it's probably going to be a thing that happens a lot more in the future. It's like America doesn't have an aristocracy where you just pass wealth from generation to generation. We create businesses, you know, and tech companies. But apparently those tech companies are starting to turn into an aristocracy. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see if they get to buy it or not. And there's not really a woke, anti-woke thing to this. I mean, it doesn't matter who buys it, I don't think. All the movie studios are woke. But it does show you how the movie studios got woke and they're going broke. You know, correlation, causation, you decide. But there's going to be less of them because the reason why they're looking for a buyer is because they're not able to stand on their own two feet. And then Paramount has Paramount Plus, so that's going to probably be one less streaming network. Although Sony doesn't have their own streaming network. Okay, that's enough on that. And Rasmussen is a right-wing polling company, and they did some polling on Disney. And they found that 71% of American adults agree with the following statement. Disney should return to wholesome programming and allow parents to decide when their children are taught about sexuality. So I don't know, 29% of Americans are like, Disney, teach my kid about it. And so that poll, it's a real poll, but it's kind of just for fun. I mean, to put questions about Disney and, you know, have one question that has the word Disney and children's sexuality, you know, all in one sentence question, that's fun. But it's not, whatever. The New York Times is not running polls like that, let's just say. And then Puck, which I don't know about. I don't know what Puck is, but I've been hearing them more and more. They must be some sort of, they're a left-wing media something or other, I think funded by Silicon Valley. But they did, they checked the favorability, the favorable, unfavorable, of 29 major companies, and Disney got the most unfavorable, which was 21% of people have an unfavorable view of Disney, which was mostly from Republicans and independents. It was 30% of Republicans and 26% of independents. And who knows, maybe some of those independents with an unfavorable view are like, they're not gay enough. Let's check Disney's stock price. So maybe 6 months ago, it got to its lowest point of $80 a share, right after a whole bunch of woke movies came out and fell flat on their face. And then like a month ago, it had rebounded a bunch and gotten up to 120. So 80 to 120. And right now it's at 105. I guess what to say about that is, I think it was about a month ago that different people were trying to take over Disney and make it anti-woke. And that was when the stock price was at 120. And so everyone's like, yeah, that's the best it's been in a long time. We don't need to go anti-woke. And so they rebuffed those people. They said, we're going to keep being woke. And then since then, it has gone down quite a bit. The Ukraine-Russia war is heating up. Russia has started attacking Ukraine in the northeast, the Kharkiv region. Kharkiv starts with a K for some reason. And Kharkiv is the second biggest city in Ukraine. I don't know how the people there feel today, but I think before this recent Russian invasion, it was a pro-Russian city. It was the big pro-Russian city. Kyiv was the big pro-West, Kharkiv pro-Russia. And I don't know if it was like the first few days, but at the beginning of the war, Russia took over Kharkiv and the whole area. There's a few big-ass cities that Russia took over without firing a shot or firing too many shots. And then Ukraine came back and just bombed the hell out of the Russians, and the Russians had to turn tail. Well, in Kharkiv, the Russians put the separatists in charge, and they could not take on the full-on Ukraine army. And I think that was because Russia had their hands full elsewhere. They didn't want to give all that up. Ooh, I just had a good thought. Instead of saying north and west and blah blah, We're going to think of Ukraine as a clock. I think that will make it possible to talk about it on a podcast. So Russia and Ukraine have been fighting from about 3 o'clock to about 5 o'clock. And this new thing is about 1 o'clock. And it is believed that Russia has about 500,000 soldiers total, and they're putting 50,000 in this Kharkiv offensive. So basically, not that much. So, it is currently not believed that they're going to rush in and take Kharkiv or even attempt that. They're just trying to spread out the defense. But, the way to spread out the defense is to spread out the offense. So, who knows who that's good for. Everyone gets spread thin when you do that. And American weapons, I think they're supposed to start getting in there a bunch at the end of this month. So maybe this is the window to attack for Russia. So again, Russia has from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock. We'll see maybe in a month if, that changes by 15 minutes, one direction or the other. And then on the wokeness front for Ukraine, I think it's their foreign ministry, one of their mega departments, has a new spokesperson. And it's a black woman. But she's AI generated. And she looks photorealistic. You wouldn't know that she's AI if you didn't, look real close. I think so far they just announced her. We'll see if this actually gets any play in the news media or something. And I got to imagine, you choose a black woman, that's got to be for American consumption. And the Israel-Gaza war is also heating up. I looked up the death toll in Gaza. It's about 35,000 right now, which I think it was about 35,000, months ago. So if you go by that number, as opposed to, what Israel is saying or what non-binary people on college campuses are saying, basically the thing had kind of stopped. So we'll see if it actually is getting going again. But I'm speaking on Saturday. I guess they're fighting in the north, in the center, and then they've gone into Rafah, it's the city on the southern part, a little bit. And Joe Biden was like, don't go into Rafah at all. And then Israel went in, and he's like, well, okay, you can go in that way. If you go in like that, that's fine. But America withheld a shipment of, I think it was 1,800 one-ton bombs and 1,700 500-pound bombs, 250 kilo. Luckily, in metric, one ton is one ton, or at least close enough. And I think a one-ton bomb is maybe, bigger than a motorcycle, but smaller than a car. Maybe the size of two or three oil drums end to end. They're pretty damn big. And Rafah, I think someone said it has the density of downtown Paris right now. So it's going to be kind of hard to find a spot where you can put these one-ton bombs and, not just really kill a bunch of people you didn't mean to or want to, or we'll get criticized for killing. So I don't know if withholding these giant bombs really affects much. Maybe it's like, you can't have these big bombs. Here's a bunch of little bombs. It's the only kind you really need anyways. Not sure on that. But a one-ton bomb will collapse your lungs at 300 meters. So 1,000 feet. And earlier this week, there was a bunch of announcements. We reached a ceasefire. And then half a day later, no, we didn't. So it's old news, but it's kind of interesting what happened. So America sent over the head of the CIA to do negotiating. William Burns, Bill Burns, Mr. Burns. Excellent. And so Bill Burns did this thing that apparently America does this to Israel and Hamas occasionally. But there were three components to this ceasefire agreement. It was one, hostages this, part two, hostages that, and then part three was you stop the war for a little while or you stop the war forever. So basically America told Hamas, we'll stop, part three is we stop the war forever and you guys get to stay in power. And then part three that we told Israel was, oh, you just have to stop it for a second, and then you can go kill all of Hamas. But we didn't tell each side. Basically, we told each side that they got the thing that they wanted. And the idea was there's so much momentum that when you find out, it wasn't what you thought you were signing up for, that you would keep going with it. Anyways, they just didn't keep going with it. And apparently, John Kerry in 2014 did the same thing with another negotiation. Let's do a little check-in on the European Union elections coming up. So they're less than a month away, June 6th. And so we're going to finally get to see how well populists do. Currently, the EU's policies are, we're going to let in Africans until everyone has to step over a sleeping African every time they leave their front door. And every multi-generational farm is closed down in the name of climate change. And the populist parties are like, we don't want those things. And the people in power are like, that means you're a racist. Someone in Germany in 1936 didn't want those things. But so the EU confidential podcast from Politico was talking about, what are the voters like this week? And the same thing that's happening in America is happening over there, where like black and brown immigrants and, you know, descendants of recent immigrants don't want a whole bunch of Africans moving in. Just like Hispanics here are getting more and more tired of migration. And they mentioned the Netherlands, the populist party, the people who are voting for that exactly match the general population. It's not, you know, like everyone thinks it's old, white, racist men. It isn't. It's everyone. It's men. It's women. It's young. It's old. It's black. It's white. Or brown. Or whatever they got there. So populism was looking good in the Netherlands. It was doing good in Germany until the populist government got, I guess, whatever. They were talking about deporting people, possibly even people who had become German citizens. And so that was a bridge too far. And so populism is down in Germany, up in Netherlands, down in Germany. And then they also mentioned Portugal. Populism is up in Portugal. I guess Portugal has been known to be cheap compared to other countries around there. And so retirees from all the other countries around there, you know, Britain, I know. I watch some YouTube people who moved from Britain over to Portugal. Anyways, they're moving to Portugal and buying up the cheap houses because Portugal is a poor country, relatively speaking. And now the price of housing has gone crazy through the roof. So maybe they got a different kind of migrants there. Although they also have a bunch of Sri Lankans there who are taking their jobs. And I think that's a Muslim country, so they're probably going to need some laws about the maximum length of knife blade you can carry around. And South Africa has some elections coming up. Not sure of the month. But Nelson Mandela's party has been in power ever since, whatever, the whites gave it to him. That's called the African National Congress, the ANC. And they've always had more than 50% of whatever the politics thing there is. Which means they didn't have to form a coalition. They could just rule outright. But it's looking like this year, for the first time ever, they're going to get 40-something percent. So they're going to have to join with someone else. But I think they're not going to join with the party that has the whites and the browns. Which leaves, like, there's one called the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters. And, like, their whole thing is they want to kill all the white people. And maybe the ANC won't join with them. They'll join with some other, even smaller party. But I think all the other parties, besides the ANC and then the white and brown party, all they care about is they just want to kill all the whites. So sometimes when you form a coalition government, the smaller part of the coalition gets to tell the larger part what to do. That's kind of what's happening in Israel right now. And so that whole ending apartheid project might get very interesting this year. All right, cheap ejaculate. I'm going to get medieval on your ass. I'm listening to the professor who wrote A Natural History of Rape. This is a sensitive subject, so sensitive listeners, all of you, run in and really start listening now. Now, I guess I should do some disclaimers. Trans people are people too. They should be able to lead a fulfilling life. Everyone should be able to love who they want to love, as long as it's consenting adults. Oh, wait, that's the wrong disclaimer. Any increased propensity for violence needs to be looked at through the historical lens, remembering in particular slavery and... Oh, whoops. No, not that one either. You'd go blah, 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 too, if your land was stolen. I think we're getting closer there. So, disclaimer, rape is natural, does not mean that rape is good. The official position of the Anti-Woke podcast is don't rape. And when you die, someone's going to look at your internet search history, so put the keyboard down. I don't know why, but I got like 5 more jokes like that. But we're going to move on. So there's a professor, Randy Thornhill. He's on the Bigger Picture podcast, January 1st, 24. And 2 weeks ago, I summarized their discussion. There's like a Jewish lady who's the interviewer, a young and attractive Jewish lady. But 2 weeks ago, I talked about how they were talking about how beauty is a genetic marker of fertility and reproduction, and what was it? Bilateral symmetry means that you have better DNA, whatever. Well, their podcast is like, it's pretty long. So they talk about genetic beauty. Then they talk for like a half hour about how viruses influence your political views, which I didn't listen to that part, but I guess that's a real scientific thing. All of this is real science. And then finally, he's got this book that he's promoting, The Natural History of Rape. So there's something called the naturalistic fallacy, which says that, you know, anything that's natural is good or okay. That's a fallacy. That's not true. Just because something is natural doesn't mean it's okay. Seems like I've heard people say that marijuana and magic mushrooms are okay because they're natural. But crack starts out as cocaine, which starts out as the coca plant. I mean, is that okay? And then oil, that started out as like algae that has been compressed under the earth for millions of years. Does that make it natural? Chimpanzees like to murder each other, or at least that's what it would be if they were humans. That's pretty natural. So anyways, natural don't make it okay. But science, trust the science, trademark. Science TM. Why do males rape more than females? So human males and males of many other species are sexually selected for high partner count. And females are not selected for a high mate count by evolution. And so one of the things selected for, the main thing selected for, about what we're talking about now, is psychological traits. Basically, the male brain is selected for higher mate count, which means also more rape, whereas female brain is not selected for that stuff. And the reason why the selection goes that way is because of the cost of reproduction. So a man, you know, he could father a kid once a day, and it only take him a few minutes. And then here's the science term. Also, he has cheap ejaculate. And contrast that with a woman whose body does all sorts of difficult stuff, and it takes a month. A woman is not going to go wasting all that, or betting all that, or putting all that on the line by raping someone, just randomly. Oh right, he mentions, then you're pregnant for 9 months, then you got to raise the kid for 15 years, or, you know, whatever it was in the old days. And maybe some guys are like, I'm a single dad, and, you know, she left and followed the Grateful Dead. I'm doing all the work. But I guess evolution looks at the minimum cost. So the minimum is maybe 5 minutes of intercourse for the man, and then a month of making the egg, and then 9 months of pregnancy, and then, you know, you might say, well, you can just abandon the baby, but really, the brain chemicals in a pregnant woman and a mom and a new mom do not allow her to abandon the baby. So, I mean, that is just a ton of work. You don't get to take a bunch of flyers on it. So again, men are selected genetically over the eons for high mate count. The ones who have a high mate count produce children who all go out looking for a high mate count, well, the male descendants. And the ones who don't go out looking for a high mate count do not produce children, and then they die off, and then that DNA, the low mate count male, is bred out of humans and other animals. And it's kind of weird, like I'm trying, you know, so a man is high mate count, what is the phrase for women? And this professor, he just kind of, he doesn't say, he's not like, oh, men are high mate count, women are low mate count. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say normal mate count. I don't know. I guess you got whatever the mate count is for women, and then for men, it's a high mate count. So, let's imagine if you're woke. Men rape more. Woke person is like, fine, I agree. Men are genetically selected for a higher mate count. Woke person would be like, well, that's probably true. I'm not sure I like where this is going. Where is this going? And you're like, well, it's just because of the cost of reproduction. And the woke person is like, yeah, that's true, but still, where are you going? Well, part of that is, you know, evolution, DNA controls the brain, and the brain controls your personality, your psychological traits. And the woke person is like, racist, racism alert. I'm talking about men versus women. What are you talking about, racism? I don't care, racism alert. Well, we're going forward anyways. So one of those psychological traits is that men overestimate the sexual interest of the woman. The young woman interviewer jumps in about this part and says that, say a man and a woman do a friendly hello to each other. The man is going to overestimate how much he thinks that woman is into him, and the woman is going to underestimate how much. So it goes both ways. You know, I do have like 5 or 10% female listeners, so that's probably something good to know for the men and the women listening. That young barista is not into you guys. And yes, young barista, that customer is into you. So men more than women. Also, young men more than old men. So to start with, men are going around, they want a high mate count, and they think everyone is into them. That leads to more rape. But you don't do it every time, you can't do it every time. So that kind of comes down to risk-taking. And young men take more risks than older men. So is this because of testosterone? Well, testosterone will make you take more risks. But young boys are more risk-taking than young girls before the testosterone kicks in big time. That's because there is a premium on risk-taking for reproduction, you know, over the millennia. And that makes me think of the 13-year-old trans kid who wanted to play girls' sports, and he had been on hormone blockers his whole life, testosterone blockers. And then it's like, oh yeah, but are, you know, are 8-year-old boys and 8-year-old girls identical? No, 8-year-old boys are probably better at sports before the testosterone kicks in. So basically, same thing here. All right, can't rape the willing. All right, so this is all for science, right? So studies have shown that men can get an erection and other stuff regardless of the willingness of the other person, or hopefully it's a person. But that's a pretty big sex difference there, where women cannot do a reproductive rape of a man who's not into it, whereas the reverse is possible. There was a Republican Senate candidate, I think from maybe Missouri, like about 10, 15 years ago. Todd Akin, that's right. He lost. You know, I don't know, you don't know any senators' names to start with. You definitely don't know the losing senators, but anyways, I know Todd Akin's name. Because he was running for Senate, and he was pro-life, and he did an interview, and he said something like, if it's real rape, women have a way of shutting that thing down. And that was his reasoning for no abortion exception for rape and incest. And long story short, women do not have a way of shutting that whole thing down. Well, and he mentioned some stuff I'm not going to repeat. But so we're talking about men raping adult female humans. Well, men have been known to rape things that are not adult human females. In particular, they rape other men. That's pretty common. So looking at the victims, what age are they? Well, most victims are after puberty up to about 35 years old, which is females of reproductive age. And this is a thing where college professors, sociologists, whatever, they're like, this, it has nothing to do with reproduction, they will say. basically because their feelings don't care about the facts. And you're like, well, then why is it usually females of reproductive age? Because you're racist and I'm going to get you fired from your job. That's why. And the peak age is 18 to 20, which coincides with peak fertility. Well, I don't want to do it, but science TM, there's something called pubescent sterility, where I guess teenagers basically have less ovulation and miss ovulations. All right, back to the 18-year-olds. 18 to 20 is when the estrogen markers that we basically call beauty are at their peak. Well, the Anti-Woke Podcast is not censored. In fact, it's whatever the opposite is. But I want to make sure this professor ain't making stuff up. So I went to Google, looked up pubescent sterility. It says that it is a period of time when pubescent females experience irregular or anovulatory ovarian cycles, which can lead to a lack of conception. So if you think about the incentives for evolution and how it's going to control the psychology of men, all of that is actually a good thing. So anyways, if you search for that, then Google suggests a whole bunch of other kind of gross stuff. Sweet, let's do it. So, can early puberty cause infertility? Answer, early puberty also could cause infertility for both genders. Do you produce more sperm after puberty? Answer, adult men will continue to produce millions of sperm every day. At which age does sperm production stop? Answer, there is no set time period when a man's sperm production stops. Question, never mind. Answer, women are most fertile from ages 13 to 30. The odds of conceiving in a given year are about 75% at age 30, but if you're a teenager, it's 90%. What age are men most fertile? Answer, peak male fertility is around 25 to 29 years old. Sperm quality begins to decline at 30. At 45, men begin to experience a significant decrease in semen volume. Older men can also take longer to conceive a child. I guess I've heard people say this. It's like almost like a joke from a movie, 80s movie or something. What happens if a 14-year-old boy releases sperm daily? Answer. One common myth is that releasing sperm daily can lead to a decrease in testosterone levels or weakened sexual performance. There is no evidence to support these claims. Daily release is a normal and healthy aspect of sexual activity. Why is my sperm yellow and jelly-like? I did not let it tell me the answer to that one. What happens if a man goes a year without ejaculating? Answer, the unreleased sperm breaks down and absorbs back into the body. Oh God, should I keep going? Why do men's mood change after ejaculating? Answer, dopamine levels drop below baseline. Can a 90-year-old man get a woman pregnant? Answer, there is limited data on that. You pervert. What happens if a woman never had a baby? Answer, more likely to have breast cancer, but if you have kids, more likely to have a heart attack. That makes sense. Now, here's a woke one. Can two females have a baby without sperm? Answer, two cisgender women, meaning assigned female at birth, in a relationship cannot become pregnant without some form of technology. I wonder if they're going to have to change that answer soon. Because it's not the woke answer, or because of the technology changing? How long does it take sperm to build back up? The full regeneration cycle is 64 days. Okay, enough of that. And I looked up stats for men versus women being raped, and I saw different numbers, but maybe 15% of women will be raped and 3% of men. Although the stats are usually grouping attempted rapes and completed rapes together, but they don't tell you what they are apart. So now they're getting into the woke narrative around rape, which is one of the main reasons why I find it interesting. So the narrative, the false narrative, is that rape is about power and is in no way related to reproduction. And I think this idea became popular amongst feminists in the 1960s. And this goes to the idea where if there's an explanation for something, then you're not as guilty. And maybe a natural explanation is the most getting you off the hook. And so I think for 60s feminists, rape was a pet peeve and they didn't want any getting off the hook. Now, I said it's the, you know, the naturalistic fallacy that doesn't get you off the hook at all. But I think in people's minds, it does lessen the guilt. I mean, basically, just like anything, people pick and choose and they have no consistency. Black men commit murder at 7 times the rate of white men. Well, that's because of slavery and they're off the hook. The vast majority of rapes are man on woman. Well, that's not natural. You ain't getting off the hook at all. That's because of power, aka pure evil. There is an explanation. You're evil. You're incorrigible. There is no other explanation, and society needs to sanction you to the nines. Well, how can science answer this question? The first one I already mentioned is it's not coincidence that it's, you know, 18 to 20-year-olds who are the number one ones, and they're also the most fertile. And then another thing to look at, this stuff's dark, but most rapes do not end in murder. If it's all about power and being evil, then there's not much more evil than rape and murder, but that's rare. Makes you think, you know, Hamas, I think, did some of that in the kibbutz on October 7th. Although the narrative on that whole thing, I don't, the facts of the matter on sexual assaults on that day, I still haven't heard exactly what happened. People are still arguing. But that's interesting. So, rape and murder is about being evil. There is no natural explanation for that one. Huh, maybe. So, rape, can I call you rape? Is one form of sexual coercion. There are 3 types, and the other 2 are intimidation and harassment. And apparently chimpanzees also do all 3 of these. And sexual coercion sounds like this is a scientific term, and it means taking away someone's ability to choose a mate. I mean, normally women are looking for 2 things, good genetics and the ability to take care of the children. And I guess sexual coercion is for men who are not meeting those criteria. So harassment sounds like it's more of a long-term thing, and then intimidation is more of a fear thing. So with harassment, a man will put costs on a woman until she gives in to copulation. That's the scientific way of saying it. And then intimidation, his examples are, I'm gonna kill you, or I'm gonna kill your kids. And then the lady says, or I'm gonna fire you. Well, so the boss thing, saying he's gonna fire you, you know, why do women always get stuff wrong? I think they might have strong opinions on this subject. So maybe if a boss just came out of the blue and said, if you don't let me copulate with you, then I'm going to fire you. Maybe that would be fear and intimidation. But really, I think, you know, your job being on the line, that's more of a long-term thing. That would actually be part of harassment. So I think that's an easy way to think about the harassment one. You know, what is sexual coercion, the harassment part of it? Think of a boss. Think of all the costs a boss can impose on an employee who's a woman. And then we get hashtag Me Too. I don't know if they're going to get to, what about climbing the ladder? You don't really want to do it, but you hold your nose. Or prostitution. Well, back to rape. He says that the bulk of rapes are committed by men who are sexually disenfranchised. Did I say young men? Young men who can't get any. Incels. Well, kind of in passing, they say that an actress having sex to get a job is rape. So maybe it's not harassment or intimidation. I mean, it's kind of a throwaway line, so hard to say on that one. Well, how about war? Let's play a clip.
Yeah, the warfare thing is very straightforward in regard to the benefit and cost situation. So in war, you have the guys are out there with anonymity, really, say in Vietnam or somewhere.
Mm-hmm,
They're out there in the jungle, and they take over a village, and they kill the guys in the village or run them off. You got all these young, attractive females left in the village, and you get lots of gang rape. And that goes not just Vietnam, but everywhere there's war. An interesting anecdote that characterizes that, two officers in the Vietnam, U.S. Vietnam War, contacted me years ago when I was doing this stuff, and said they had been just haunted and intrigued by the way their men behaved when they would go into, so these are officers that are there right in the jungle with the guys, they go into the village, they take over the village, they kill the guys or run the guys off. And then one of these officers put it, these church boys all of a sudden became gang rapists. And it has to do with the low cost and high benefit, presumed high benefit of raping all those pretty young women.
So what causes this behavior? I don't think this is a thing that can be known for sure currently, but the professor's theory on it is that the male brain has been selected for a sexual coercion cost-benefit analysis. And apparently this is always there, and it can flip a switch in the blink of an eye. But basically, what is the cost and the benefit, the upside, the downside? And basically, the male brain is like, oh, here's a chance to pass on my DNA, and ain't nothing bad gonna happen to me because of trying. Then you do it. I mean, if you look at this from an evolutionary biology perspective, it's pretty clear. This is one way that, you know, DNA is reproduced through reproduction. So our DNA is going to make us a brain that tells us to do it sometimes. And all of us have ancestors who committed rape. And so if you're great, 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 grandpa. Hopefully it's a lot of greats. It probably isn't. So not only do you have that guy's DNA in you, a little bit of it, but, you know, his kid had half of that DNA. And what's funny about it is women have just as much male rapist DNA in them as men. I mean, all of us, half our genetics is from men and half from women. And so, just like every genetic thing ever, some people are more prone to one thing or another, which means that some women are more genetically prone to rape than, you know, almost all men maybe. They just don't do anything because they're a woman, but they can pass it on. Well, so that was me talking. Back to what they were saying after the Vietnam story. And the lady is like, you know, this woke, toxic masculinity narrative that they're trying to feed you is BS. And she says, you know, men who rape are not going to listen to talk about toxic masculinity and change. Which sounds good. Maybe it's true. But it kind of contradicts the science that the professor is bringing up. She's like, there's evil men who rape who won't listen to talk about toxic masculinity. And there's good men who will listen to it, but they were already good, so who cares? But in fact, based on what he was saying, right, you go from a good person, and then all of a sudden you're in a village in Vietnam, and you do bad things. Good people, good men, do bad things. But she just really wants the man to be evil, the rapist, a man who rapes, to be evil. She probably has a husband, and she probably would not except that if, you know, he had, in his younger days, if he had been sent over to Vietnam, he would have been doing exactly the same thing as the rest of them. I mean, this is how everything is. You can lay out the facts, but people have preconceptions, and they're not going to change based on the facts. And there's something else they say repeatedly throughout this discussion. They're talking about this to help women. She's like, women in college need to know this stuff so they can keep themselves safe. And he's like, yeah, I wrote this book for women so that, you know, they know what's out there. So, dear listener, can I change my reason? I'm just making this segment to help women, the joking part of it too. Never mind that anti-woke motivation. I'm a good person. Please think I'm a good person. Apparently studies have been done where videos are showed to men, and videos of rape combined with extreme violence do not cause arousal in men. But videos without extreme violence cause arousal in some men and not in other men. Significant amounts of each. And you're not going to be able to predict which kind of man someone is. You know, like, oh, he's an upstanding man, so he's going to be one way or the other. No, you don't know. Well, and then at the end of the podcast, he brings up something that kind of contradicts that, or I guess maybe says it's more complicated. So there's something called life history theory. And in this theory, there is fast track and slow track. People, you know, types of people. Fast track people, slow track people. And the track that you end up on is based on resource availability growing up. Basically, were you poor? Then you're likely to be a fast track person. And if you have plenty of resources, you're likely to be slow track. And fast track people have poor impulse control and less empathy for other people's feelings. And they have sex at an earlier age. I think that's the fast track part, or the fast part. And they have a higher propensity for sexual coercion. And basically just reverse all those things for slow track. Grew up, you know, I don't know about rich, but grew up with stuff, good impulse control, good empathy to feel, you know, whatever, you comprehend and care about how other people feel. And then low propensity for sexual coercion. I'm kind of like, am I resisting this? Am I like, oh, it's all genetic, fine. It's controlled by your genetics, fine. Oh, wait, it's controlled by, did you grow up in the ghetto? So now it's not your fault because you grew up in the ghetto. Now I don't like it. I need to remind myself, I am a nature and a nurture guy, a genetic and an environment guy. And, you know, science has shown that genetics are stronger than environment, but still environment matters. A stat I mentioned from the same guy, I mentioned it 2 weeks ago, was I think psychological traits are on average 80% genetic, 20% environment. And you know, it's funny, like they give these percentages, right? So that's 80% genetic, 20, leaving 20% for environment. They don't have a third number in there for just evil. Like, oh, you're, oh, that was 20% genetic, 20% you grew up in a, you know, you grew up poor, and then 60% you're just evil. Well, that's the end of the episode. Links in the description, and thanks for listening. Thanks for listening.